Ready for a career in behavioral health? Earn your online degree at Herzing University. Choose from health and human services, psychology, or social work programs. Gain the skills to work, coordinate, and manage nonprofits. Secure a bachelor's in psychology to study mental health or advance your social work career through our online Masters of Social Work. Let us help you become a social change agent. Your future starts now at Herzing University. Text HEALTH to 85109. That's HEALTH to 85109. Or visit herzing.edu.
You're listening to a Countout Podcast.
Everyone, and welcome to another edition of the Stardom Road Podcast here on the Countout Podcast Network. I'm your host, as always, Scott Edwards, and with me, as always, is Trent Breward. Trent, how are you?
I'm doing okay. Like, it's one of these situations where we're just trying to get everything, all our ducks in a row. This is one of those episodes we've had to record a little earlier than maybe we normally would. Like, we like to be ready with these things. But, yeah, I have forced our hand. We have to be even readier than normal. But we're all on top of things for once, which is a nice change of pace. Maybe we're getting into the zone for 2024, and this is going to be the norm for us.
That'd be nice to think, right? So Stardom obviously in real life has been pretty busy. So we're happy to take a step back still and go back into the history, because we are still doing our DDM series, obviously with the idea of Julia leaving Stardom as well, which has...
Remember Donna Del Mondo? Remember Julia?
Has added...
Remember Rossi?
Curveball to all this. People are going to watch the second one and be like, wow, they didn't talk about that at all. Well, that's how ahead we are. Trent's going on a trip, so you know, we made sure to be prepared. But this isn't a show
where we have to be current, thankfully.
This was a fun episode. If you saw the thumbnail, of course, it's Shuri and Julia having their moment at the end of their matches, because it's the matches episode of the series. We were going to talk four matches that were very important in the history of DDM. Not all like faction matches, obviously. It's just matches that are important in the faction's history, and it will be a lot of fun to go through. I know it was to watch them. That's why we gave you the homework last time, so hopefully you're coming into this episode as well having that great time.
Yeah, we are going to check your workings, make sure you actually watch it, and then just go on to Cage Match, you know, Ryan Dilbert's favorite website, and check the ratings. Oh, that was a good match, and there was a really good spot, according to, you know, AEW Fan 43. Yeah, it's a great show. No, we're actually going to ask you to show your workings and make sure that you actually paid attention. We're hard taskmasters here at the Stardom Road Podcast.
Yeah, that's what I think of when I think of our podcast. Just, you know, hard asses. Yeah, this is like the most laid back podcast I do.
Change that for you if you'd like.
No, it's okay. But a lot of people been watching, listening, so thank you. If you're on YouTube, hello. If you're not on YouTube, still hello. I'm not gonna wave because you can't see it, you know. It's different. But let's just get to it, right? Why wait around? Pretty easy episode here today, so we're gonna switch our lovely graphics here. And if you're watching over on YouTube, you get to see the match cards, because boy oh boy, you're gonna watch Julia chain 75 times. I think that's the fun of the cards themselves. But the first match is all the way back at Yokohama Dream Cinderella in spring in 2021. I believe it was April 4th, 2021. And this was a big time match. This, you know, before we get to the match itself, we kind of talked about this a little bit in the first episode of the series, of how this match kind of had a lot of drama around it for one reason or another. Not only was it the same day that Will Ospreay won the IWGP World Heavyweight Championship, I vividly remember that for some reason, because Bea Priestley had just said she was leaving right before this match, so it was just all the connections at once. Yeah. But of course, Julia, right after getting her head shaved in that fantastic match with Tam Nakano, she had... We were all talking about how she's going to build herself back up, right? She's going to build herself back up. And she was, right? She started with Fukigen Death or whatever she was at the time.
Nothing says building yourself back up than a main event match for a championship.
Yeah. It did not take long for them to get right back to it. And not only that, but they put them in the main event, which was also a big deal because Utami Hayashishita, for the second straight pay-per-view, was not in the main event as World of Stardom champion. She'd instead face Bea Priestley, as I noted. And probably, from what I've seen, Bea's best match, but that's neither here nor there.
Save this match for the Blair Davenport retrospective.
Yeah. I'll make sure this show's canceled before that. But this was a big time match. It's tag team versus tag team. Shuri and kind of the story we had been talking about. Shuri kind of de facto leader at this point in many ways. Julia just kind of down on her luck. But this is when we got G.I. Julia. If you're looking at the graphics, she had already grown some of her hair back by the time this match happened. It was like my favorite look of hers in the G.I. Julia phase, I should say.
You like the slightly spiked hair follicles?
Yeah, I loved that. I thought she like it was just like perfect. She just looked so badass, and then this match was great, so that helped too. And then you know, Shuri had the gear that kind of repped that, which was kind of the military-esque, but in her colors.
Trucker Shuri.
Yeah, and of course going against Mahime, who had just become champions not too far before this. Ultimately, their only reigns with the Goddesses of Stardom championships. Let's get to the match itself, though. Big main event, obviously a big spot for Micah and Himeka. This is as big as it gets, right? And this match was go from start to finish. That's like the way I remember this match more than anything else, because it never slowed down. It was all action all the time. Micah took a beating in this match. Like, she took so many bumps. It was nasty.
Yeah, it's funny. Like, this match, I think they definitely went out with an idea in mind. And I think maybe to justify their main event position was to say, well, we're not going to start in first gear and work our way up. It's like, well, we're going to start in third gear and only have to shift up a couple of times before we hit the top mark. It's an interesting match in that respect. And I do think, like, when you watch these matches chronologically that we're sort of going through today, you will notice like everyone kind of steadily improving. And so it's kind of fun to go back and see, honestly, Julia, Micah, Himeka all looking a little bit rawer in their styles than Shuri, I think, was pretty much already there. She just needed the opportunities to sort of prove herself in Stardom. But the other three in particular, you can sort of see they're sort of still finding their way a little bit. But what makes this match really stand out and sort of worthy of watching as opposed to just stacking things when they're all in their sort of prime form is that you get to see that evolution not only through this, but through the course of the match. I thought the first sort of couple of minutes, like they were pushing hard, but they hadn't quite hit their rhythm yet. So they're a little bit, you know, a little bit of miscommunication here and there, not quite perfect. But as they get into the flow of things, as they find that rhythm, it really begins to pick up. So even though the pace stays the same, the execution of it makes it feel more frenetic, feels like it's hitting more. And in that respect, it's quite a fascinating match to see unfold.
It is, because you're watching Julia and Shuri learn kind of how to team as a duo, because it's very different, obviously, than just doing faction matches. And Micah and Himeka at this point in time, they're in a very interesting spot, because I'm not going to like say they're like raw at this point. They're getting better.
Yeah.
Himeka has a really good performance in this match, for example. She hits a powerbomb on Julia. That's one of the nastiest ones she's ever hit, by the way.
Which is impressive, because her running ones are like nasty by default. But this is just a standing one. She puts some extra oomph behind it.
Yeah, it just felt like they told each other, all, like they sat, and this is the history of Stardom in many ways. When factions go ahead against each other, they hit harder, they're meaner against one another. It's just nasty. Yeah. It's absolutely nasty, and that's what we saw here. In the closing, probably say half, truthfully, that's really where they clicked. I'm definitely with you. Like, while the pace was going and going from the get-go, they were just off here and there, and then they just found it, and that's where you know, you get the power bomb, you get the suplexes, you get the lariats, and mind you, Micah and Haymaker were hitting plenty of those in this match.
They were competing with each other to hit the best lariat today. And any time they're in the same match, it feels like they do, but this one in particular.
And the closing stretch was great because, you know, it looks like they're going to get Shuri down. They're starting to hit all their tag team moves. And then ultimately, as we know, ALK did not go down here, and they'd go on to win the championship belts. And what I thought ultimately was a fantastic match, even though at the time there was much debate of not only there was a lot of debate going into the match, there was a lot of debate once the match happened, and then, of course, Mahime dropping the belts, and now looking back, knowing they never got them back.
It is interesting seeing, like, people talk about this match at the time and also in hindsight. It's almost getting forgotten, I feel like, because obviously every member of DDM would go on to have better matches and stuff. But this is such an integral match to, I think, where DDM begins to find their full form together, because they finally get to showcase the four top members just going hard at each other, doing what Donna Del Mondo does best. But there is definitely some mixed opinions, and it doesn't help that this is still in that period where anything Julia heavy is still kind of has a bit of a sour taste for some people, especially taking the main event for the second straight time. Definitely changes the impression people had of this match. But going back and watching, at the time I remember being essentially converted mid-match. I was watching and going, I don't agree with these guys getting the main event. And I'm watching going, but that's a really good match. Yeah. They're really doing some good stuff. And now coming back and watching it with the benefit of hindsight, removed from the, I guess, the drama, removed from Stardom drama, if you can believe it or not, at this point in time, removed from it all and sort of seeing it just as
it's so easy.
I know, right? It's like, okay, yeah, no, this, I can appreciate this match just that little bit more on top of how much I already did enjoy it. Yeah, it's not their best matches of all time, but it signifies Donna Del Mondo. And in the post match, you can kind of see them sort of coming together with that. You know, Julian, Shuri, they go on to form, yeah, they want to form the best team in Joshi, and I mean, they do a pretty good job of it considering they didn't have that long together. They did a fantastic job of getting there. Micah and Haymaker, it's a very big learning experience for them. You know, they had their dreams kind of pulled out from under the rug, but the idea as well, it's your teammates and you're meant to get stronger and get better and get back to this spot. Unfortunately, they didn't, and in retrospect, maybe that is particularly disappointing, but it is a moment that empowered both of them to get better moving forward.
It really did feel like the moment of building up Haymaker and Micah at the end. Like, yes, they had already been champions, but there's something about having that main event match against those that you have trust and you're comfortable with. And I think that's what we saw here. It's also the idea of, okay, you know, the two people ahead of us in our faction, they're coming for us, and can we stand up to them? Obviously, they lost, but it wasn't until the very end that they truly lost. They were in this match from the get-go, and many times they looked like they were going to win. And I think that's the beauty of this match in many ways. My favorite Julia, you know, it's the 2021 and 2022 combination from from post the TAM match, so nothing before that, not the Wonder stuff, it's post the TAM match to when she wins the world title. That is the best Julia we've ever seen, because she transforms after that TAM match. You see it in this match, her style is very different. If you watch this back and you know Julia now, you're like, what do you mean different style? You go back and watch Julia prior to getting her head shaved. It was very different. She truly did transform. Even if she was already back in the main event and already back as holding a title, she was still changing a lot as time went on. And I think this match really proves it. And Shuri at this time, you know, she was just kind of like there to help Julia and keep her busy in many ways. Little did we know, very soon after, Shuri would create her own destiny. But that's the
literally on this night, you know, post-match after they do the, oh, you know, we're going to work hard as a tag team and all that. Shuri calls out Itami, and that sets up the 43-minute draw, which brings all the attention, potentially changes the entire flow of what that year was going to be, and transforms Shuri into the megastar that she already showed she was capable of. Mm-hmm. She just needed the opportunity and attention.
It's pretty crazy to look back at this match and what came from it for everyone, right? I mean, we're looking at people that would all go on to become world champion, four of the most popular wrestlers in the, like when they were around. Himeka was one of the most popular wrestlers in Japan, period. Obviously, the other three are as well, but Himeka was always tops for the most part. If you ever saw like fan voting or anything, it's just a incredible feat that these four had, and obviously Natsupoi was part of it as well. And as we talked about in the first two episodes, that was the true DDM. Anything else, it was just added or not the same. It was these five, if we include Natsupoi, of course. But this match is fantastic. If you didn't check it out, go do your homework and check it out.
It's always important when you're doing these kind of retrospectives is to take a look back a little bit earlier in their run. Yeah, it's easy to remember the peak form, but you can appreciate that a lot more when you see the development. And all four of these people were fantastic at this point in time, and it only speaks to how good they become that this is kind of the quote-unquote rawer versions of most of them.
Seeing both Micah then and Himeka then, and then our last match is them facing each other, obviously. It's so crazy to see how much they changed, but also they didn't in many ways. Like, they didn't change their moves much. They didn't, like, they just fine tuned their wrestling and they hit a little harder, even though if you look at the power bomb that Julia took in this match, you disagree. It's really cool to see. And the same for Julia and Shuri, obviously we'll get to them too later, how much they change. Obviously Shuri was just phenomenal. So it's like, how much did she really change? That is part of like how I really liked how we picked these matches, because you really do get to see all four of them develop a lot. We don't get to see tons of Poi, but Poi didn't have too many like inner DDM matches like this. It was more the turn, which we're about to get to.
Yeah, she had during this time, like she was doing the high speed stuff, and then she moved into the trio stuff with My Himepoi, which was really good, but it is very separate from a lot of this other stuff. And while you can appreciate their work as a tag team, you don't get the intra DDM stuff, which is so integral to the faction. Plus, you know, Poi doesn't deserve a highlight spot after what she does.
Excuse me? No, that's fair. In the terms of conversation in DDM, no, I think that's fair. Not all of her best work, because that match with Saya Kanatani, she was still in DDM, I believe.
Yes. But
outside of that, all of her best work has mostly come outside of DDM, funny enough.
And the trios, and that's when she got she exploded in popularity once she joined Cosmic Angels.
Yeah, well, that's just kind of what happens with that group. Anyways, let's go. We've been talking about it enough. Now, you look at this card. If you're watching the YouTube channel, you're like, why did you make us watch this? It's not about the match. I'm going to preface it again. It's not about the match. It was nice to see Unagi, though. it really was, because, like, my brain has already, like, completely changed Unagi to someone who isn't part of the Stardom world, but just this uberly popular freelancer now. So, like, anytime I see her in Star, I was like, oh, right, she was awesome here. It's a shame that she left, because she was so good in Cosmic Angels, but I digress.
I think she needed to leave in a lot of ways to unlock her full potential as an overall performer, which incorporates the, like, behind-the-scenes stuff.
So it was Cosmic Angels and Colors, which...
Yes.
I also forgot. I clicked on this. I was like, oh, there's Saki.
Also, note this image is slightly outdated. They had to change it up a little bit due to injury. It turned into a 5-on-5, not a 6-on-6.
Yeah. Sorry, I couldn't find the correct graphic.
I'm just explaining because if people see this and then they watch the match, it's like, hang on, wait, what? Yeah. Or if we're talking about, like, oh, you're not talking about how good Tekla was in the match. That's because she wasn't in the match. She was just there.
Boom, roasted. So it was Mina Shirakawa, Tam Nakano, Unagi Sayaka, Hikaru Shimizu, and Saki on the Cosmic Angel side against Julia, Hameka, Micah, Natsupoi, and Mai Sakurai. This match went 16 minutes and 2 seconds. The eliminations went as followed. Hameka and Mina Shirakawa were eliminated at the same time. Trent, how was Hameka eliminated?
She was betrayed by her fellow team member, Mai Sakurai, who thought that a one-to-one trade was worth it, only to realize that, no, a one-to-one trade is not worth it, especially when you go and get eliminated 3 minutes later.
Hikaru Shimizu eliminated Mai Sakurai. Micah. Oh, and by the way, I just want to, like, this is like a fun little non-important, but fun nugget nonetheless. Micah against the Cosmic Angels was just an all-time scenario. I can't remember the match where she planted all three of them with Michinoku drivers and then just was like, yeah, I win. But that was year.
Was that for the Trios title? Or?
Yeah, I think it was. I think it was the last time they ever wrestled each other. And for the Trios belts, because they wrestled each other a lot. And she just hit them all three. And I just remember, like, everyone on Twitter be like, oh my God. But she eliminated Unagi, and then she eliminated Hikaru Shimizu. Saki eliminated Micah, and that left it down to 2-on-2. It was Tam and Saki versus Julia and Natsupoi. They get rid of Saki, and that's really where we get to our story now. Pretty much the entire story that you need to know. We're gonna probably talk more post-match than we are match here. But it's down to Julia and Natsupoi against Tam. They're all on the apron. They're trying to pull Tam off. And this is when I remember why I couldn't stand this, because, like, in kayfabe, in my head, I'm like, what would have happened if Tam fell? Right? Like, oh, Natsupoi, you can't make that decision anymore because you got rid of her. You know, and mind you, the lead up to this match was the Natsupoi matches with Tam, which was the steel cage and the random cork. And everyone was saying to themselves, why are these matches happening? This is the reason. So Tam is getting held by Julia for presumably a suplex.
Yeah, German suplex.
But Natsupoi is going to super kick her first. Tam drops down. Natsupoi stops. She's like, oh, I'm not going to kick Julia. And then she just kicks Julia. And that's when I was like, I watched this again. I was just like, right. And then, you know, Tam stares at Natsupoi. Natsupoi stares at Tam. Then she goes to hit her with the German suplex. And Tam helps out. And then she hits the suplex. And Julia's eliminated. And then Natsupoi eliminates herself. And just like that, Natsupoi leaves Donna Del Mondo in a very emotional moment. She gets in the ring. She talks to Tam. And that's when Julia gets on the mic and says, you were just making fun of Tam like 2 seconds ago, which got the crowd to laugh. And by the way, this is, of course, during clap crowd still. So
yes.
any reaction like that was always very noticeable. And then you pretty much went through the line of emotions of this group, with Hameka being one of the more emotional ones, because Natsupoi's whole thing was, I'm not your mascot, I'm not your pet. I'm not DDM's mascot and pet, which was kind of slowly being told throughout the months of this story, but personally never thought about it. Well, yeah, I was like, whatever. We had long moved on from the Hameka and Natsupoi problem. So in my brain, it's like, who cares? Hameka was very upset. Yes. She's like, you were my friend, and this is why Trent obviously hates Natsupoi. She made Hameka sad, so that makes Trent sad. You know,
she earned it.
Yeah, yeah. Then Micah gets on the mic, and Mike was very angry. Micah was angry. Like, we had the three different reactions. Like, Julia was like, you're an idiot, but okay. Like, she was just kind of, like, processing it. Hameka was devastated. Tekla was devastated. She didn't talk, but she was devastated. She had tears going down her eyes. She also wasn't in the match.
My Sakurai was there.
My Sakurai was there. Can confirm.
I thought everyone said something. Like, in my memory, like, they went through the trial. And we did Julie. We did Hameka. We did Micah. Tekla stepped up. I'm like, oh, I thought she was the last one to say anything.
Yeah.
And, yeah, she doesn't say anything. I'm like, oh, okay. I remember that differently. And then everyone leaves. I'm like, oh, okay. Well, I guess, like, my Sakurai, you know, she only recently joined.
Yeah.
She didn't have the time to build the connection, but it was just kind of funny,
Obviously, Micah was very angry, and then Natsupoi would join Cosmic Angels, and as we know, the Cosmic Angels would never be the same again for the good. I would say Natsupoi, like, I remember when the turn happened, and I was kind of upset that I was like, I don't really like this. Like, the post-match is great. Perfectly done. Phenomenally done. Everyone did their part perfectly. But, like, the overall feeling, I was like, really? Like, she's leaving DDM? And because then you started to feel the original DDM, obviously, break. Shuri was already gone. And then, as we said last episode, was it last episode? Yeah, it was.
Yes.
Once Natsupoi left, DDM no longer felt like DDM. It's just,
yeah, this was where it really sort of underwent that change, because she was so important. Like, it seems cruel to name her as a pet and a mascot, but she inhibited that kind of role and kind of inspired everyone, got everyone to be a little bit more relaxed, a little bit more fun. And so it was interesting seeing her react to that, because, like, it is funny, like, yeah, she felt like a mascot, she felt like a pet, and, like, it felt like, no, she's overreacting a little bit. She was treated well in DDM, sure, but once she left and joined Cosmic Angels, it really did feel like she had a chance to truly reach her potential. You know, she'd go on to become one of the most popular wrestlers in Stardom. It felt like her general value just shot up. She's, you know, second in command for the biggest faction in terms of popularity. She's releasing CDs. Like, her star really did rise from this moment, as great as she was in Donna Del Mondo.
Mm-hmm. It ultimately was the right move. Mm. And so we sit here recording now. She still isn't Wonder Stardom champion. I don't know if she will be. Hopefully, you know, maybe she confirmed by now that she will be. Well, not that she'll be champion, but hopefully she's back. That would be great.
Mm.
But ultimately, it ended up being the right move.
Yeah.
But at the time, I just remember being like, and I still feel right in that feeling, because, like we said, DDM wasn't DDM anymore.
Yeah. But Cosmic Angels began to finally find themselves.
Yeah.
There's a couple of interesting little tidbits that I felt like weren't fully recognized. Like, in the aftermath, like, we kind of wanted there to be more DDM Natsupoi stuff.
Absolutely.
And it was mostly relegated to when they found themselves in the same matches. Mina Shirakawa was an interesting person to watch in this post-match stuff, because she's not as happy to see Natsupoi as everyone else. She's kind of almost a bit reserved, a bit like, hang on, you know, what's she been doing to us? Now we're just accepting her with open arms. I feel like that wasn't followed through fully, unless you're looking at kind of her splitting into Club Venus later on as kind of being the aftermath of that, because it's not the first time they've used faction introductions to lead to someone wanting to escape. Dan Nakano, for example, is maybe the best example of that in Stars.
Yeah.
But the other thing, I guess I'm curious to ask you, because, like, you did bring it up, like, in the course of the match, like, Natsupoi is going hard at all the members of Cosmic Angels. Because I did rewatch it specifically thinking, does she kind of back off a bit? Like, is there hints of it? And there isn't any hints in the match.
No.
But the way it all goes down, and also in the post-match stuff and how Natsupoi is reacting, do you feel like, obviously it's not actual, but, like, in kayfabe, do you feel like it was a split second decision for her? Because that's the impression I get. Like, she maybe was thinking about it. She was torn about, should I stay? Should I go? And when she pulls the kick initially, it's almost like in that moment, she's like, I need to make this decision now. Am I going to Tam, or am I remaining loyal? Yeah. Do I stay a pet, or do I try and evolve? Whereas, like, other turns, like the Momo Watanabe turn and stuff like that, feels more rehearsed, I guess, in a lot of ways.
this turn, if this makes sense, is a lot different from like a lot of Stardom turns in that idea that it was like a decision made at that moment. It's one that, while like initially I was like, I do like it better that way, because if you think about it, like what she had been doing leading up to that was proving herself against Tam Nakano, and now she wants to prove herself alongside Tam Nakano. I think that's a nice addition to it in the long term, maybe not in the initial moment, because no human is thinking that when this originally happened. But now, like, now that we're here, now we know what happens, it worked, right? Like, it ultimately worked. I just wanted to add in the post-match, you know, she's naming everyone. She's like Micah, Hameka, Julia, Mai, Tekla. And then she hits them with the bye poi. And I just lost my mind.
Yeah, because like we'd had a couple of like really serious promos, and it felt like Natsupoi was going to pour her heart out here. And she's like addressing them all for the final time. And she hits the bye poi. And it's like,
obviously, like we all know it's a joke. Like we see it as a joke type thing now, because like she'll do it any time. But that was like the most serious bye poi we'll ever get to get. It was like very much like bye poi.
She's lucky Micah or Hameka in soccer after that bye poi.
Micah got mad at Suzu Suzuki after the tag league this year, but when Natsupoi broke her heart in the middle of the ring, she was like, all right. After that bye poi, we'll be like, oh, you.
That changed things forever for her.
Yeah, especially with Micah's anger. Maybe that's why Micah's world champion, because she got bye poi'd. That would have been.
If that was the cause, we'd have a lot more world champions than we do.
That's true. But obviously, this in many ways was like the unofficial end of true DDM. You know,
the core five is gone now, even though there's technically six at this point in time. But
by the way, this was back on June 9th, 2022. So DDM ended a few months ago. but my point remains. Let's get to the big one now, shall we? Of course, Stardom Dream Queendom 2022. Shuri versus Julia. I don't think I need to tell you how this, like how we got here, but I'll give you a quick summary. So obviously they face off at Stardom World Climax. That leads to Shuri leaving DDM and creating God's Eye. And they have an incredible match, fantastic match against one another. But it was very clear that Shuri was the more capable wrestler than Julia at that time. And remember that as we get into this match. She just outworked her in the end. Like this, and you have to remember, when Shuri was world champion, she was unstoppable in every way, shape, and form. This woman was unstoppable.
And she'd been unstoppable for a year prior to winning the championship too, which is very important in all of this.
You pretty much needed to have, you had to hit her with every thing you had. And when I say that, I don't mean like, oh, a suplex. No, you had to hit her with every big, nasty move you had to beat her, right? Because this is a Shuri who beat Julia and Mayu Iwatani on back-to-back nights in pretty convincing fashion, mind you. Mayu didn't tap out, the ref called the match, but still, a submission one night after.
An early call, by the way.
Yeah,
Mayu was still crawling towards the ropes.
I'm still angry about it, but it's fine. She got her payback for the IWGP title.
Yeah,
4¾. Anyways, obviously Julia steps into the 5-star Grand Prix and has one of the best stories told from start to finish throughout that Grand Prix. She loses her first two matches, and then she rolls through. She has one slip up along the way, and then on that final night, she beats Suzu Suzuki and Tam Nakano. She drew with Suzu Suzuki and then beat Tam Nakano in the finals, getting that win back that she never got, by the way, from when she lost the Wonder and lost her hair. It was a perfect full circle moment. But she needed to win the World of Stardom Championship, and that's what brings us to this match. Shuri, at this very show, would accomplish a year-long reign as World of Stardom champion. And this card was all about this match.
Yes.
Like, I went, when I clicked on it to, like, look at the rest of the show, I was like, oh, right. What a weird card. And ultimately, I think that made the match that much better, right? Because there's always, there were some good, like, really good matches on the show. Like, there was Kairi and Utami, which I thought was really good. I remember the artist match being really good with Prominence and Oedo Tai. And then you had a 7-Up versus Cosmic, versus Meltier. That was good. Mm. We don't have to talk about the Wonder match. But everything was building up to this is the match. Yeah. This is everything is on this match. Because if you remember the year prior, Shuri and Julia were obviously facing off, but they already faced off like so many times before that. So it's like this is just the ultimate card to complete our year. This was the ultimate match to complete the year. And by the end of this match, I remember you and me obviously share the same show, Ocean Cyclone show, and we had to record like the same day as the show because we had to get it out for the weekend. And we all just walked into there. We were giving our end of the year rewards, and we're all like, so we're picking the same match, right? And we were pretty fresh off of it. So let's get to the match, shall we? Before we get into like the moves and stuff, I've been talking for a little bit. What was your memories of this match going into it and obviously leaving it?
There was a lot of hype surrounding this match, both because, you know, the rest of the card had been fine, but like even before the show had started, you're looking at the card going, it's a fine show, but like that semi-main event with Haruka Umesaki in the Wonder position did feel awkward. And yeah, it's Rigoku Hall, so people were expecting like top to bottom big stuff. And it didn't quite feel there. But this match was like, okay, if any match is going to make this worth it, if you're going to fork out your money to buy this live on pay-per-view, it's going to be this match. And just as the match is going on, yeah, you get a feeling sometimes when you're watching a match for the first time where it's just kind of, as it's unfolding, you're like, yeah, this is a special match. This is a match that's going to stay with you. And it felt like, not just me, but like Joshi Twitter was having a collective, okay, he's that match. Yeah. Match of the year, all of that jazz. Yeah, it's like, because coming into this, it felt like a lot of people had different ideas of what match of the year might have been. There's not one solitary, pure, undeniable standout match. And halfway through this match, people are going, okay, I'm glad I didn't write my end of year awards or anything like that. And you just like, Just stick the landing. And they stuck the landing. I remember the match finished. I'm like, okay, yeah, look, that's a 5-star match for me. That is going down as one of the best Stardom matches I have ever seen. It's up in the pantheon with Utami versus Shuri, Mayu Iwatani versus Io Shirai, Io Shirai versus Miko Satomura. It's on that kind of pantheon. And it just felt so far above anything else that'd come through that year, which is saying a lot because there was a lot of good stuff that year, but this just felt like on a whole nother level.
Yeah, I mean, 2022 is a great year for Stardom, don't get us wrong. But it was just the end all be all. I think the best comparison is it felt like the Utami Shuri match when it ended, right? It felt like that. This is it for everyone. This finished seventh, I believe, on Voice of Wrestling's top 100 list. So it wasn't just us. It wasn't just Joshi fans. This was a match that left a lot of people talking. I know it's a match that won a lot of people over as well to make them Stardom fans. I think it's probably the last one that's truly done that. So that's probably the most hype we can give it. But obviously in this match, it's very physical early. Shuri's kind of outclassing Julia because they're doing the grappling base, and then that's kind of where Julia realizes she's got to take it to her style that she had been developing pretty much since she lost that Wonder of Stardom championship, which is this rough and nasty and brawling like style that only she could do. It's a style that, you know, will make people think that she should be apologizing to people after their matches, making sure they're okay.
Even though she already does.
Even though she did on video. but that's fine. it's the match that makes Julia special. That is what the style is. What people fail to understand outside of the bubble, because there's a bubble that just looks at Julia, it's like, oh, she's a superstar, guaranteed. You got to know what the full package is with Julia. Yes, she's got the look. Yes, she looks like a megastar. Yes, she handles herself like a megastar. But it's the matches. When she's at her best, it's just, it's incredible. I firmly believe this is the best match of her career. I know some people still say it's Tam and Julia from that Wonder match, the hair versus hair. I don't see it that way. I get it. That was a very emotional match in itself, but this match took the cake. It was the end of all of her story. And ultimately, it was, we didn't know, but it, in many ways, it felt like the end of her stardom journey, because ever since then, it's been haywire, and there's reasons to debate there now, you know, but this was it. And it's the suplex into the chairs that really... I still watch it back. I say that was nasty, because Julia hits the back of her head on, you know, the chair part, that's the back of the chair, essentially, yes. Standing up. She hits her head on that. Shuri hits her everything on every part of the everything in the chairs. This is also during the time that, remember, still clap crowds. It didn't feel like it when that was happening. Everyone was just like, and it happened, and it was phenomenal. And then they kept wrestling for another 20 minutes.
it's crazy, because it's not just that spot, because I think a lot of people remember that particular spot. Oh, wow. There's a series of three moves here, just within that period, where just like it goes from Julia trying to out-wrestle Shuri and failing and realizing, oh, I'm making the same mistakes I did back earlier in the year. Yeah. And then she decides to do a hanging hammerlock Northern Lights suplex on the apron. Yeah. Everyone goes, oh. She starts pulling up the ramp and you think, okay, they like to do the ramp spots in the big stardom main events. It's either like a suplex, or they'll run 100 meters and do a drop kick. And you sort of question how much physics really paid in an effect to this.
Usually falls flat, that drop kick, but yes.
Yeah, it always feels like it should be bigger than it does. Maybe they realized it when they were preparing this match, because they're like, you know what? There's a nice drop off from this ramp, and there's a whole bunch of chairs. And look, it's a brutal spot. It's hideous. They pull it off about as safely as you could. Shuri lands flush, but it's a
she does.
It's about as safe a landing as you could get in this situation. She lands on the right part of the chairs. She kind of sprawls out properly. Julia does hit the back of her head, but like, she doesn't go straight down. She kind of holds herself for a bit and controls the fall a little bit. After that, you think, okay, they're done trying to make a point. We get it. You're badass. The next spot is to go over to the tables and do a pole driver through them. I felt tuckered out. I felt destroyed by this point. And as you said, there's another 20 minutes of hard wrestling and brutal wrestling and all of that. But it is like, it sounds spot festy, but it works within the context of the match. It isn't just we're going from spot to spot to spot, but it works in the context of the story of Julia realizing, I cannot out-wrestle Shuri. She is the best wrestler in the world. I have to basically drag her down to my level. And to do that, instead of trying to hit her with 50 moves, she just tries to hit her with 5 match-ending moves.
Yeah.
That's all she's going for at this point, is moves that should finish any normal person, and just trying to wear down that final boss life bar that you see at the end of the 100-hour JRPG video game you've been playing.
It really does feel like every move she hits from that suplex to the end is a home run move.
Yeah.
And what I mean by that is, like, she is going for the win every single move. But the problem is, it's a normal move when it's happening to Shuri. Because Shuri had, like, the aura that Shuri had back then, and I know people love to use aura incorrectly these days. I will use it here correctly. Anytime she made her entrance, anytime she stepped into the ring with that world title around her waist, you knew not only were you in for a fight, you were in for a long night. This was not going to be easy. And most of the time, she, like, there's a match between her and Utami from like a month before this. It is phenomenal. The only reason it's not like recognized as one of the best matches of that year is because we knew who was winning.
Yeah.
And that's what Shuri had her entire reign. We always knew who was winning. That's not something that always happens with a world champion. And I think that's another case for her literally when she was in the ring. It's not just like the kayfabe idea of, oh, well, she's not beating her, obviously. No, it was literally she stepped in there. There was no chance. And Julia knew if she didn't hit these bombs, it was going to be one thing. She hits, you know, the butterfly suplex from the top rope after hitting her with a headbutt. Mind you, earlier in the match, Shuri had hit Julia with a headbutt, and she just walked right through it. She's like, that's nothing. And that's crazy. That's crazy. I just, like, a shoot headbutt, and she no-sold.
Julia spends a lot of this match trying to prove she can do what Shuri's doing. Like on the defensive. Offensively, she's going for haymakers for home runs, which Shuri doesn't do. Like, she will work you down. And you see this anytime it goes to a normal match in a way, like they're going for counters and stuff. Shuri wins that encounter, typically with a head kick. So Julia is sort of going for the haymakers on offense. But defensively, she's trying to channel what Shuri's done for the past year. And that's just kind of fighting through everything because she knows, like, Shuri can break me down and beat me. And it's a mental game to kind of say, I'm at your level. I can take anything because you're also taking anything I can take. And the one criticism I've seen of this match is that it does devolve into just big move, kick out, big move, kick out, big move, kick out, which I can understand. But I think in this match, it does earn that because of the aura that Shuri has and the strategy that you see Julia employing to win this match. It doesn't feel like they've just gone and got, okay, I've got cool moves, I want to do them. It felt like a story that they were telling here.
It was the will to win, ultimately, that got Julia through this match. Julia hits the Ryuin. Shuri comes back with a glorious driver. Shuri also hits the, is it the Shusakai?
Shusakai, yeah. She goes for one off the top row.
Which, by the way, the Shusakai at this point had not been kicked out of.
No.
So I remember when she hit that, and, like, obviously in our heads at the time, you're like, well, Julia's winning this match. But but still, we had not seen anyone kick out of this, and this was Shuri. Would it be that crazy? She kicks out of that. Crowd has a pretty good roar at this point. They're like, oh, and they, again, clap crowds, so it's always good. And then she goes for the super Shusakai, like, thank God we didn't ever have to see that.
Julia is crazy enough to take it, though.
Yeah, Julia hits a Northern Lights bomb. That's obviously not enough. But the match ends when Julia hits the nastiest looking, like, is it a cradle type Northern Lights bomb? Like, she is just, listen, if you watch Julia pick Shuri up, right? She just, like, has her completely, like, dead weight too, and just drops her on her head.
That's it's like a pump handle Northern Lights.
Yeah,
because she sets it up that way, but instead of doing it quickly, like, she just kind of holds her up in the air, and then, like, at the time, I remember thinking, "Have you not got the strength to get it fully?" But like, she has no trouble just holding the spot and then just kind of cradling it into the. It's like it's very light angled, like, it's not as vertical as normal. It's like a horizontal Northern Lights bomb into that. It looked nasty. I think it probably was a little nasty to take as well. But by that point, like, they were just trading nasty landings.
It was probably, like, the best describe is, like, if you mix the Glorious Driver and the Northern Lights bomb, that's how she did it. Yeah. It was nasty. It was fantastic. And it's like, oh, it's over. And she won. And she had her moment. And after this, rather than these two be rivals, it was instant friendship. It was instant happiness that Julia was the one that was able to uncrown Shuri after a year-long reign. They hugged. It was just such a fantastic moment that I am sitting here and stewing that it wasn't much more. Because ultimately, the reign that Julia would go on to have is so not fitting of who Julia is. And it angers me, and it's going to anger me forever. But we have this. We have this match. And honestly, that's all we needed because it was phenomenal.
The final thing I do want to mention in this too, and it's very fitting because we're doing a Donna Del Mondo retrospective here, is that for Julia to win this match, and really I'd say the first time she really, like, feels like she's got a hand on the title in this match, is when she starts digging into the Donna Del Mondo history. She hits Shuri with Micah's finisher. She hits Shuri with Himeka's finisher. And then she also does Hana Kimura's finish, the Tiger Lily, which isn't a Donna Del Mondo finisher, but it's obviously tied
part of her history
to Julia. Like, it's a classic trope that you see, like New Japan have done a bit, Stardom have done a bit as well, but it always feels just that next level of importance, and it really hits home the momentous occasion here. And it's very fitting that that was what truly changed the tide in this match. Shuri gets a couple more moves in, but it really feels like that is when it changes from Shuri is the unbeatable champion to, oh, we're in the process of seeing the new champion crowned.
My appreciate, and this isn't a Julie episode, you'll get those eventually, but this isn't a Julie episode right now. But my appreciation for Julia, like, goes through the roof more and more when I look back at something she's done. Because for someone that people try to paint as such a... They try to paint her as a selfish person. They've done it throughout her career. When she got there, obviously. And you even see it now. She couldn't be less selfish. Like, even in her matches. Like, you see her... And she pays respects to the people that have helped get her there. She does with Hana Kimura all the time. That's someone that she doesn't, you know, like, they had their rivalry, but, you know, it wasn't a very long rivalry, but she always does it. And I just have such a great appreciation for her. I have a great appreciation for Shuri. We're not ending this episode here. Feels like we should have. but
chronologically...
But I do feel like this next match is a good way to end it, because this match, if you haven't seen this match and you're listening to this show, stop what you're doing. Go watch it. You can come back to this later. Go watch this now. One of the greatest.
Actually, watch it through, like have it on in the background, watching it through so we get the full view count, and then go onto a different computer and then catch back up so we get the second view. And
Just everyone should do that anyways. Whether it be the view count or the listens on podcasts, it's fine. We'll take both.
Yeah,
there you go. And then, of course, the final match that we'll talk about, and I think it's a fitting match because it's the retirement of one of DDM. And that, of course, is the retirement of Himeka, one-on-one with Micah. Obviously, this wasn't Himeka's final match, but it was a very important one in the history of DDM, in the history of Himeka, and of course in the history of Micah.
It was her final singles match in Stardom, which feels like shouldn't be a retirement match clause, but it actually kind of was. Such was the story of the Himeka retirement road. But it was this, I think for a lot of people, this is the retirement match, and the other two matches are essentially like the epilogue. Yeah, the Kurikan Gauntlet match is just kind of like a way to say farewell. It doesn't feel like a match like this does. You know, this had the grand stage. It was at the Yokohama Arena. It was the biggest ever show Stardom's done. It felt like a big deal. And this was kind of the match that, obviously, there were bigger matches on the card, a lot of them, but this felt like the emotional apex of the show. And it only happened halfway through.
Yeah, I mean, this was obviously stacked. This show, this is the biggest show in Stardom's history, obviously. And this was like, I don't know, probably six matches after this?
All the title matches were still to come, which I was reminded when, like, after the big fitting farewell and goodbye, Chris Charlton's introducing the next match, which was the tag title match between 7-Up and New Eras.
Was that when I got a shout out? No.
Damn. No. I think you got the shout out on the pre-show.
No. It was on the main card. No.
I look, Scott, I don't know because I wasn't listening.
You were there.
I was there. It was interesting to actually rewatch this match as it was seen by most people, because I saw it from my spot, which was fantastic. I was very lucky to get the seat I got, but like, I couldn't see some of the small details, and specifically like the final moments when Mark is telling Himeka, please kick that's out like the most as she drives with three Michinoku drivers. I couldn't hear them where I was sitting, and even if I could hear them, I don't speak enough Japanese to understand what was being said. So like, it was after the fact that everyone was talking about how emotional that moment was. I'm like, yeah, it was emotional. Himeka didn't kick out. And people were like, no. Mike was telling her to kick out. I'm like, oh yeah, that would have really hit home.
Yeah.
But the emotions could be felt throughout the arena regardless.
It's a fantastically done retirement match in many ways. It's not the match of the night.
No.
It's not the match of the year. It didn't have to be any of that. Mm. It had to be the perfect moment for Himeka to retire. And Himeka has this, you know, all the pomp and circumstance and the big entrance and everything. It's my favorite look of hers, which is, you know, very unfortunate that she had decided to bring it for retirement, but I digress. She had her moment, Mike has her moment, and little do we know this would be kind of the start of Micah's ultimate rise to the title. But it's just very emotional from the start, and then they get into it. You don't really think about that. Then it's just the two powerhouses running into each other time and time again, and you're like, yeah, this is what it's all about. You know, they're playing back the five-star Grand Prix match that they had. And even towards the end, you know, Himeka's coming close, and she's, you know, you think she's going to win. She even hits the running power bomb. But a phenomenal kick out and a phenomenal moment by Micah in that. It was like, oh my God, is Micah going to win a retirement match? But no. And then, of course, the end, which you kind of, you know, jumped the gun, but it's fine. The end was phenomenal. It's a Michinoku driver, another one. And then Micah with all the emotion. All the emotion. She had a headbutt, didn't she, as well?
Yeah, there's a headbutt in there as well.
Which is
disgusting. It's before the final Michinoku driver.
It's the nastiest version of sorry, I love you, but you know, it's fine.
It's a retirement shoot headbutt.
And she's pleading for her to kick out. She does not want Himeka's career to end.
She wants to hit more Michinoku drivers. Yeah. 4, 5.
That was
three ain't enough. I need 5.
Nice. But she hits the Michinoku, one of the nastiest looking ones that she's hit. And like that, it is the end. 1, 2, 3, an emotional moment. And if you didn't think DDM was over when we said it was over with Natsupoi, it was definitely over after this.
Yeah. Yeah, it's as much as like the people involved were still very good. Obviously, Micah would go on to win the title. Julia is still Julia. Mai Sakurai had really started to find herself during this time. And Tekla's a great role player in all of this as well. But losing the people they had lost and losing the momentum they had lost. Once you lose another core member like you did in Himeka, it really did feel like the shift in the circumstances. Micah, her attention would change to some of the free agents in a lot of ways, and Barry Bombers would be doing their thing. But in this moment, like it is like the last truly great moment for Donna Del Mondo before they properly hang up the boots. Couple of really nice moments in this too. We had Mina Shirakawa doing the introductions, which, you know, was obviously one of those things that, like, if you were following along in Stardom at the time, her and Himeka would always go particularly hard at each other, but they had a very close connection behind the scenes that extended beyond their time in Stardom together. And we got Flying Jumbo, you know, Himeka jumping off the top rope to the outside. Yep. Didn't get a lot of verticality on it, but probably for the best, because the rest of DDM were not there to help out with the catch. They rushed in at the last moment, didn't really give Micah any help there. And then, yeah, it just lined up perfectly because she tried for it again. Micah did that beautiful delayed superplex. Like, I remember watching it at the time thinking, oh, they've screwed it up. They're going to have to reset. And Micah's just like, no, I am the most powerful wrestler in Stardom. You know, pound for pound stronger than anyone else. I am making this work, and just hits that perfectly.
Yeah, it was everything you wanted the match to be. Like,
yeah.
There's nothing I would have added.
Mm.
And I think that's a credit to what they accomplished here. Very emotional. Obviously, I like that they could have this emotional moment between the two and then have the emotional moment between the roster rather than all at once. Because I just think, like, Himeka and Micah, their history is so attached that if they couldn't have had this moment, it would have felt wrong.
Yeah.
Right. and I'm happy they did. And obviously the retirement road for Jamaica was so special. And this is the perfect way to kind of end the DDM matches, because Micah would go on to become world champion, and she was the final one to do that. And Jamaica was there to celebrate, which made it all the better. And then of course DDM would end, but, that's it for matches. We are done, but as we do with all these episodes, we have one more conversation point, and that is talking about the legacy of Donna Del Mondo in Stardom. What do you feel the legacy of DDM is in this promotion?
In many ways, they're just kind of like a natural, I was going to say a natural disaster, and that makes it sound bad, but it's just like this force of nature that just came into Stardom, reshaped it, kind of changed the dynamics of what the promotion was, what the roster was, and forced everyone to adapt. You know, every faction after Donna Del Mondo kind of hit have to take a step back and go, we need to refind ourselves. Queen's Quest, it took a little while and their story would get told, you know, in 2023. Stars really kind of buckled down and they found their dynamic and they've just continued to improve strength to strength. Cosmic Angels took from Donna Del Mondo and found their perfect form, especially once Sari Anu come in. Oedo Tai really kind of went into that, you know, they found their gimmick and their character so fully. Because, yeah, if you remember 2020, Oedo Tai was, that was tough. A lot of people wanted that faction to end in 2020, and with good reason, but they rebuilt themselves, and they weren't trying to compete with Donna Del Mondo. They found what worked for them, and in my opinion, have refound what makes them special in this era. And then someone like God's Eye would come through, and they'd kind of have to redefine themselves against Donna Del Mondo. They came in, and they became the center of the Stardom galaxy, and everything revolved around them and had to adapt around them. For the better, ultimately.
For nearly 4 full years of domination, there's never been anything like it in Stardom. They have an opportunity to be called the greatest faction. Now, there are factions that have lasted longer. Obviously, Stars, Queen's Quest, Oedo Tai, they have the history behind them, but they have many different leaders behind them. They have many, well, Stars doesn't, but I, you know, it's fine. But like, they have many different members behind them. DDM was made to accomplish one thing. And when it was all said and done, it ended. I think that is an accomplishment to the faction. Their lifespan was the perfect amount. And there's no other faction that has ever been called the Jordan Bulls. This was, at its height, the most unstoppable force Stardom's ever seen. They somehow were able to beat the idea of an Io Shirai unstoppable force because they had everything. Like you said, everything in this company revolved around DDM for the majority of their existence. And I think that is a credit to the talent, obviously the decision to go with this faction. And I know it wasn't always loved. DDM was not always loved and adored. But by the end, pretty much everyone was devastated that it was over. And I think that is a credit to what they were able to accomplish. The legacy of DDM is, if not the greatest faction, the greatest run a faction's ever had. Because it is 4 years. You know when the story starts. You know when it ends. You know exactly why it happened. It has some of my favorite moments, my favorite matches. My favorite wrestlers, like it has everything, right? And many of Stardom's greatest moments is because of this faction. The big reason Stardom got so popular is in part because of this faction. There is everything you could connect to Stardom's popularity right now is probably because of Donna Del Mondo. And I think that's an incredible accomplishment and one that I'm very much going to miss. Obviously, And in some ways, it's very fitting that we are on the road to a very different Stardom moving forward in every way, shape, and form. Whether, you know, we know Julia's leaving. We don't have to sit around and act like she's not anymore. Ross Hilgawa's gone.
Hmm.
It's fitting that his final greatest creation is kind of how that ends. Obviously, I'm not going to sit here and say I'm happy that Ross Hilgawa is gone from Stardom. I'm not going to sit here and lie. But it all just feels right if you look at it that way. And it's been fun to cover DDM. It really has. It's been a fun 3 episodes. Sad it's over, but as you and me talked about when they ended, it felt right. Like there was no reason for them to keep going. Obviously, we know why, because Julia was leaving, but the reasoning made all the sense even. And a new era of Stardom is upon us with no more DDM.
A new era. So Mariah and Amy Sarai taking over.
Yeah. Yeah, there you go. But I hope everyone that listened and watched and whatever you did enjoyed our 3-part series. We love doing these. We really do. It's a lot of fun.
Is the reason, the main reason we do these, I think, in a lot of ways. Like when we were talking about doing Stardom Writer, we're going to cover wrestlers and factions, and it's going to be a lot of fun going back.
Yeah. It's why we do this. And I'm not going to sit here and tell you what our next episode is. We're doing this so far in advance, I couldn't even begin to tell you. But it'll probably be very timely, I'm sure, based off of what is happening in the current world of Stardom. I think we're going to have a couple ideas by the time it's our time to go again. But hopefully you enjoyed the episode. Hopefully you enjoyed going back into the history of DDM. If you joined at any part of their history, I hope you enjoyed it. And Trent, I know this is, again, very far ahead of time, but what should the people be looking out from you?
Well, you should be looking out on my Twitter at OneUpCulture, because I'll be posting about my time in Japan when this episode comes out. I'll be over there. I am booked to go to a Stardom show as well as some other events. I don't want to give everything away, but some very exciting stuff going on while I'm in Japan. I might have articles also coming out. I have written a piece which is very appropriate for Stardom Road, which is looking at the Mayu Iwatani versus Io Shirai story, specifically their friendship and the betrayal that led to Mayu becoming the icon. That is ready to go. I don't know when it will come out, but when it comes out, you'll be able to find out about it on at One Up Culture. It'll be going out on the wrestling website. It's a topic that we will no doubt cover in depth on this episode, on this show as well. So you can kind of get a bit of a preview at it. Obviously, we'll cover it differently. Scott has a lot to bring in as well. And, you know, a couple of episodes of audio podcast versus writing, you can cover things in different depths. But there was a piece I really enjoyed going back and watching their story. The Natsupoi betrayal really resonated, because Io Shirai did literally the same thing, just with her hand instead of her foot. But yeah, that'll be coming out. I have podcasts, obviously, Ocean Cyclone Show and Choco Cast. That'll all be coming out. I'm hectically trying to record backup episodes for, you know, while I'm away. But yeah, probably check out my Twitter, because I'll be posting more often than not, because I'll have fun stuff to post about.
Yeah, check out the Ocean Cyclone show. That'll be coming out Saturday by the time this is coming out. It'll be a bracket episode, March Madness, which is all a lot of fun. I believe we did the wrestlers of 2023, like their ratings on PWI for Joshi. Yes.
Yeah,
and we'll kind of compare them. It won't just be their all time, but like how they've done over the past year, 2 years or whatever. Not gonna lie, haven't recorded by this time, so I'm just waffling now.
But we have the idea, which is kind of good for us.
We'll see how it goes. So make sure you listen. You want to know how it goes? You want to know if we are lying? Go listen to it over on Russell Inn. Let's see. We're kind of in a busy time for Stardom, so I'll be covering that the best I can. Lots going on. I have some article ideas in the works regarding what the future may hold for one promotion plus Stardom. Check out the Five Star Joe Show if you want to hear all the updated news on Stardom as well, and Rossi's future, and so on and so forth. I think that's best we leave it there. Follow me at Scott E. Wrestling on Twitter/X as well.
And if you aren't following him, now is the perfect time to be doing so, because like, he is the best person to be following and covering all of this. Scott cuts everything down concisely, explains what's going on, gives the translations and stuff. As someone who has been trying to avoid social media a bit, because it's just all mayhem and chaos in wrestling in general right now, but especially Joshi, it is nice being able to just click on his timeline and go, okay, that's where everything's at right now. So obviously this is a couple of weeks into the future, things will have changed and stuff, but I presume the one thing that hasn't changed is that Scott's still giving the best overall coverage of this. So probably already following him, but especially at the moment, be doing so.
Well, I greatly appreciate that, Trey. That's probably the most you ever put me over on air. So we're going to end it here. We're just going to stop now. I mean, this might be the end of Star Road by that point. That was just way too nice. Trent was never going to be that nice to me again. So I'm just going to run with it for Trent.
You can bring things back to normal by saying Jungle Kiana stuff.
For Trent, I'm Scott. This was the Star Road podcast here on the Count Out Podcast Network. Until next time, see ya.
This has been a Count Out Podcast. Every year, the Wrestling Observer Hall of Fame receives a new crop of potential inductees. And on our new Count Out Patreon series titled The Ballot, it's our job to discuss whether or not these newbies should become Hall of Fame wrestlers. Hello, my name is Ryan Knightsey, and every month, a guest and I will analyze the regional careers of newly balloted wrestlers for the Observer Hall of Fame. Are they day one votes? Do they belong at all? Find out on The Ballot every month on patreon.com/countoutpod. Again, check out The Ballot on patreon.com/countoutpod. We hope to see you there.